On November 29, 2011, Judge Patricia Seitz stood before prosecuting attorney Andrea Hoffman, representing the United States of America, and defense attorney Humberto Dominguez, representing Luis Fernando Bertolucci Castillo. The court convened at 12:05 p.m. with the words, "Case number 1120321, criminal, United States versus Luis Fernando Bertolucci Castillo." This was something of a problem. You see, Luis Fernando Bertolucci Castillo does not exist, or at least not legally. Hoffman informed the judge that Bertolucci was an alias, that the individual sitting there in court preparing to plead guilty was indicted and arrested as Bertolucci. But, Hoffman told the judge, his true name, we come to find out after we had arrested him and brought him into the United States, is Fernando Blanquio Ceseña. I contacted the Southern District of Florida United States District Court to ask if this hearing was recorded. The court reporter's office told me that the transcript is the only official record and no audio recordings of the hearing are available. So, in what follows, the brilliant actor Joaquin Cosío will read for Blanquio, and I, sadly, will read for everyone else. Judge Seitz asked how the defendant would like to be addressed, and both attorneys said, "He goes by Blanquio." The judge then proceeded thusly. "Mr. Blanquio," she said, "I'm sure Mr. Dominguez has explained to you the purpose of this hearing. It is so that I can hear directly from you whether or not you have sufficient information to make an informed decision that this is what you would like to do, namely, plead guilty to counts 2 and 3 of the indictment, and that you are doing this freely and voluntarily, that no one is forcing you to do that. We need to establish those two things here in this hearing, so that's why I'm going to be asking you questions. Counts 2 and 3 of the indictment charged that Luis Fernando Bertolucci Castillo first conspired to possess, with the intent to distribute, a controlled substance while on board an aircraft registered in the United States. And secondly, that he obtained an aircraft certificate of registration by knowingly and willingly falsifying and concealing a material fact, namely, the true owner of the airplane. The indictment charged that he did all of this lying with the intention to transport cocaine into the United States." The judge then said, "I need truthful answers to the questions that I ask, because I rely on what you tell me. So, to underscore the importance of telling me the truth, I'm going to place you under oath." They swore him in and told him to take a seat, and then the judge began. "Please tell me your full name, your age, and the extent of your formal education." He responded. The judge then asked him about his schooling, training, his pilot license, work experience, and current employment. Blanquio said that he studied in San Diego, California, got his license in 1982, and worked as a pilot. He said that he was currently unemployed and that his most recent job was selling airplanes. The next series of questions and answers in the transcript are worth reading in their entirety. Again, I'll read for the judge and Cosío for Blanquio.
"My full name is Fernando Blanquio Ceseña, and I am currently 50 years old. I am a pilot."
"So you were not flying planes, you were selling planes? I mean, you were not flying planes to make your living. You were selling planes and maybe flying the planes that you were selling?"
"Precisely. And well, I also had, well, that's because with the other alias that I had, I was only flying and I had the license. And I was also doing commercial jobs, executive flights, charters, and aerial ambulance flights."
"Under the Bertolucci name?"
"Well, unfortunately, also under the name of Raul Jimenez Alfaro."
"How many aliases do you have?"
"The truth, besides the other one, Luis Antonio Ortega Sandoval. Yes, only those, Your Honor."
"So there are 3, or are there 4?
"Aliases, 3 altogether. And my real name is the one that I mentioned, Fernando Blanquio Ceseña."
Wait, unfortunately, Raul Jimenez Alfaro? Why unfortunately? Remember that plane stuffed with 5 tons of cocaine in Campeche? Cocaine is, if you will, the Starbucks of illegal drugs, where toad venom would be like the Utunari coffee. If you've never heard of Utunari coffee, look it up and be amazed. If you'd like to try a cup, I still haven't, you might be hard-pressed to locate a nearby vendor. In fact, you'd probably have a much easier job finding a tiny plastic bag of Coke. For cocaine is available pretty much everywhere in most cities and towns and countries across the world. Yet it is mostly produced in only 3 countries, Colombia, Peru, and Bolivia. Though in recent years, Ecuador, Brazil, Venezuela, and Argentina have all increased their relatively smaller cocaine production. A leaf that can only be grown in the Andes gets processed and mixed with all kinds of chemicals and kerosene, and then gets further processed and altered and finally turned into either a fine white powder or crystal chunks that millions of people will pay hundreds of dollars to inhale. The United States government says that this harsh concoction is bad for you, and you must be protected from it, and so it must be made illegal. And then, because so many people still want you to have this bad stuff, it must be made the target of an all-out war.
America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse. In order to fight and defeat this enemy, it is necessary to wage a new all-out offensive. I have asked the Congress to provide the legislative authority and the funds to fuel this kind of an offensive. This will be a worldwide offensive dealing with the problems of sources of supply as well as Americans who may be stationed abroad, wherever they are in the world. It will be government-wide, pulling together the 9 different fragmented areas within the government in which this problem is now being handled. And it will be nationwide in terms of a new educational program that we trust will result as from the discussions that we have had. In order to defeat this enemy, which is causing such great concern, and correctly so to so many American families, money will be provided to the extent that it is necessary and to the extent that it will be useful.
That was Richard Nixon in 1971, saying it'd be a war and he'd fund it like a war. But then a funny thing happened. Every time the United States government pumped hundreds of millions of dollars into its war on drugs, the production and distribution of those drugs grew, and the number of people enjoying them also grew. It turned out that the war was the very best thing for the business. This, however, created a few marketing problems. How to sell the idea of the war if everyone can see that the war makes the business boom? Arrests, and it turned out, murder. This, in fact, was probably the point in the first place, you see. Now the United States government could arrest and kill its enemies at home and across the world and say, look, we're fighting the war on drugs, we're keeping you safe. And with arrests and murder as commodities themselves, the drug war also created a lucrative marketplace for information about one's competitors. And since everyone in the business knows this, everyone lies. And because there are remarkably savvy people involved in this industry, the top executives become very good at lying. And to be good at lying means knowing how to blend truth and lies together in dazzling combinations. Fernando Blanquio Ceseña, a man with at least 3 false identities, would seem to be adept at this particular entrepreneurial skill. Perhaps that is why he writes of himself, my lies make me special. In January 2021, colleagues at Detective reached out to me about a curious individual they'd been interviewing using a clandestine cell phone from inside a prison in North Carolina. The man claimed to have worked as a pilot, entrepreneur, and air logistics coordinator in the international drug trade for some 30 years. My friends at Detective made a podcast in Spanish and wanted to know if I'd be interested in working on a sister podcast in English, looking into this man and his story. Sure, I said, but I'd need to do my own investigation and see what I can find. Detective invited the legendary Mexican actor Joaquin Cosío to read the English translations of Transportista's quoted interviews with many of
them. And well, you know me. I went for it.
My name, unfortunately, is John Gibler. And this, in a sense, is Transportista. Episode 2, Unfortunately, Raul. That day in November 2011, Fernando Blengio Ceseña was preparing to plead guilty to a conspiracy charge and to the relatively lesser crime of falsifying information for aircraft certification.
My full name is Fernando Blengio Ceseña.
He was cooperating with the DEA and thus had reason to believe that he would get between a 3- and 5-year sentence. Raul Jimenez Alfaro, however, was by then a name linked to various airplanes busted flying cocaine out of Venezuela, including the locally well-known Cocaine One. The judge, however, didn't seem to notice. Prosecutor Hoffman knew at least some version of Blengio's involvement with the DC-9, but apparently had decided not to pursue any charges related to the 5-plus tons of cocaine Blengio says he actually sent, not planned to send, but sent, from Caracas to Ciudad del Carmen in April 2006. That 2011 plea hearing in a federal district court in Miami was the first time Blengio's real name and his 3 false identities were publicly linked together. Perhaps the DEA did not want to draw attention to Blengio's past activities. At that time, they were negotiating with Vicente Zambada Niebla, son of Ismael Zambada Garcia, one of the most powerful drug trafficking executives in the world. Blengio could provide detailed first-hand testimony to be used against Zambada Niebla, testimony that might have seemed more valuable to the DEA than finally putting a name and a conviction to a 5-year-old drug bust. It was shortly after this, sometime in 2012, that Blengio first got in contact with Gerardo Reyes, a Colombian journalist and author who has won numerous awards, including the Pulitzer Prize. Reyes was then, and still is, the director of the investigative journalism unit at Univision in Miami. When I first reached out to Reyes in early 2021, he was surprised to hear that I was working on a story about Blengio. I'll come back to that. Reyes was also, especially considering his surprise, very gracious and helpful in speaking with me. We had a long initial conversation in Spanish, but then spoke again recently in English. I asked him how he had come in contact with Blengio.
John, actually, I don't remember exactly when I met Blengio. I found a memo in my files from May 2012 in which a source, I guess, talked to me about him for the first time. This person said that Blengio has an explosive scoop information regarding then Mexican presidential candidate Enrique Peña Nieto. The guy told me that Blengio was a pilot for El Chapo Guzman in charge of political figures who were in the payroll of the drug traffickers. He also said Blengio was the former boyfriend of Peña Nieto's wife. He told me that Blengio has information that may derail the presidency of Peña Nieto because drug trafficking. I was told that Blengio reached an agreement to sell this story to López Obrador, the rival candidate in Mexico, for $1 million.
Million dollars? Reyes told me that he first published an article about Fernando Bertolucci's arrest in the Dominican Republic. He thinks that Blengio might have written to him from prison after seeing his article, but he can't remember. By early 2012, however, they'd exchanged several messages and letters and spoken on the phone.
I finally got in contact with Blengio. He was willing to talk to me, so he authorized a visit to a very remote federal detention center in Oakdale, Louisiana. That was the weekend of June 1st, 2012. And following his recommendations, I arrived to the jail with a bag full of coins, $30 in coins, to get lunch from the vending machines. Blengio was in his early 50s. The jail gym was not doing a very good job for his belly. A very well-mannered, well-spoken person. He called me Mr. Reyes, never by my first name. His friends call him El Capi. The first thing that impressed me was his amazing memory. He's an encyclopedia of the history of drug trafficking, not only in Mexico, worldwide. He remembers the names of all the cartel bosses and his lieutenants from the 70s, the exact dates of his adventures, detailed numbers of all the planes he flew, and even the nicknames of the Colombian drug traffickers. But he also remembers the names of politicians, lawyers, artists, and sport stars who were involved with the cartels. I found that he loved barbecue chicken wings from the vending machine. So while he licked his fingers, he was very chaotic, talking, jumping from one topic to another, maybe because I was the first person who visited him in jail. He couldn't stop.
Not too long after that visit, Reyes had another chance to see Blanquillo in Miami, but only rather briefly. On August 6, 2012, Blanquillo had a sentencing hearing in Miami. Recall that in November 2011, he had pleaded guilty to two of the charges against him. In that hearing, the judge asked him multiple times if he was making that plea freely, without having been pressured, and he said yes. The judge asked him if he felt his lawyer had represented him fairly and informed him of all his options, and he said yes. The August 6, 2012 hearing, however, was in response to a request by Blanquillo to change his plea. Blanquillo argued that he did not receive adequate information from his attorney before making his plea. He arrived that day with a different attorney who had immediately asked to be removed from the case and found a very disappointed Judge Patricia A. Seitz calling him a liar. She quoted to him from his own testimony saying that he was, quote, completely satisfied, end quote, with his attorney's services. Judge Seitz then had a very long, sealed side conversation with the lawyer then representing Blanquillo, Mr. Urbano. When they returned, Judge Seitz summed up her opinion on Blanquillo's request to change his plea in no uncertain terms. I'll read here from the transcript.
The concern that I have for you, sir, is that you either bald-faced lied to me under oath when I took your plea, or else this document that you filed and that you signed is a lie. And you need to have a very serious self-examination, sir. You may think you are smart, but right now it's not coming across that way. And you are coming across as someone who has no integrity. Someone who will say whatever he wants to say because he thinks he is smarter than everyone else.
Seitz interrogated Gerardo Reyes, his fellow journalists, and a Colombian lawyer claiming to be there on Blanquillo's behalf, and then promptly tossed them out of the courtroom. Reyes would publish an article 2 days later with the headline, El Chapo's Pilot Breaks with the U.S. Government. The article addresses the intrigue regarding Blanquillo's break with prosecuting attorney Andrea Hoffman and her accusations against Blanquillo, but does not mention the DC-9 or the 128 suitcases. Reyes kept in touch with Blanquillo, using him as a source for background on various stories he was working on. Blanquillo at the time did not want to go on the record until several years later, in the midst of all the hoopla around the arrests and escapes and rearrests of Joaquin Guzman Loera, El Chapo, when Blanquillo decided to tell his story to Reyes, or so he said.
To this point, after hours of conversations over the years, Blanquillo was reluctant to go on the record, so I had to use his information only as a background for my stories. He was good in helping me to connect dots and identifying people in the narco world. Remember, he has been behind bars for more than 10 years, so he has toured almost the entire federal prison system, meeting for long days and nights in their cells with Mexican, Colombian, Venezuelan convicted drug traffickers, each one telling the tales. So he kept telling me that one day he would let me have the scoop of the story about one of his airplanes that got in trouble. Well, it was a DC-9 that landed in Ciudad del Carmen, Mexico, with 5 tons of cocaine in 2006. He said that the operation was somehow infiltrated by the CIA. The interview on the record for this story never materialized. I introduced Blaine Hill to a Venezuelan reporter who did a good piece on the case of this airplane and the corrupted connections in Venezuela where the plane took off. So when we were preparing a special program about El Chapo Guzman, I convinced Blaine Hill to go on the record. My idea was recording him from jail by using his voiceover with a video and image as the people from the Making a Murder documentary did greatly. He was very helpful. He not only described Guzman in his different stage of his life, and basically he explained how the Air Force of the Sinaloa cartel operates, the procedures to land a small plane in a clandestine track of the Sierra Madre, the international routes of the drug trade, and how they refuel the planes on air. He explained that step by step. But days before we were going to air the program, Blaine Hill stepped back. And he said that he would not authorize the interview. He sent a letter in legal terms arguing that the revelation of his statements will put him and his family in risk or something like that. Despite that I have his authorization on the record, I decided not to use the interview. Then I learned that he has been in contact with several reporters offering his life story.
My conversation with Reyes led me to wonder why Blancio had reached out to the detective if he had previously stopped Reyes from using his interviews. Had Blancio done something similar with other reporters? Would he try to pull out from his commitment with detective? Next time. Transportista is a Detective production with Exile Content Studio in partnership with iHeartRadio's My Cultura podcast network. Directed and narrated by John Gibler. Transportista's voice by Joaquin Cosillo. Editing and sound design by Fernando de la Rosa and Pedro G. Garcia. Reporting by John Gibler and Menio Larios. Produced by Julio Gonzalez. Voice recording by Hugo Merino and Rene Garcia. Transportista's interviews translated by Carla Ruiz Argaiz. Production supervision by Nando Vila and Álvaro Céspedes. Associate producers Alonso Aguilar and Alejandro Duran. Diego Enrique Osorno is the creator and executive producer along with Daniel Eilenberg and Isaac Lee. Executive producers for iHeartMedia are Connell Byrne and Giselle Bunces. For more podcasts from iHeart, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.